What is the No Spin News all about?
You know that this is a fact-based analysis news program. You know that. We avoid speculation. We don't do conspiracies here. We don't do party politics here. We're not nonpartisan. That's wrong. Not that. Okay, we are advocates for a stronger America and a more just society. We don't believe in communism. We don't believe in socialism. We don't believe in nihilism. We don't believe in the progressive woke culture. We think it is un-American. We don't support that. So you should know what we are. And it would then crystallize what we do.
Listen to the No Spin News. Subscribe to Bill O'Reilly's podcast feed wherever podcasts are available.
I'm Josh Hammer, and welcome back to America on Trial, your one-stop shop for all your legal news pertaining to the 2024 presidential election and all the major pressing legal headlines affecting our country and our endangered American way of life. On today's show, our deep dive takes us back into the criminal courtroom of Justice Juan Merchan. An explosive day of testimony yesterday there in New York City from the former porn star Stormy Daniels, Trump's attorneys pushing for a mistrial. Lots of drama unfolding before our eyes. I'm hoping that we can cut through the fog of war, so to speak, and try to just get you updated on what is actually happening there and what you need to know to stay informed. Then later on the show, in today's closing argument, another huge Middle East-related headline. It seems that the Biden administration has formally paused its shipments of certain weaponry, munitions, and bombs to Israel and the IDF over their concerns over an invasion of Rafah, Hamas's southernmost stronghold in the Gaza Strip, on the border with Egypt. A lot to unpack there as well, plus many other headlines. Huge, huge update in the Florida legal case as well. So without further ado, let's begin as always. Let's go around the horn. We're going to start right where I just teased, which is the state of Florida. Big update for you in the federal prosecution in the Sunshine State, the state of Florida. As we have talked about on this show for a while now, the pretrial motions and procedures and evidentiary hearings, all of that in the Florida case is very thorny because you're dealing here with classified documents and there are all sorts of arcane statutes and procedures such as the early 1980s era Classified Information Procedures Act, known as CIPA for short. A lot of these statutes and regulations that pertain to how classified documents can be used as evidence in court, because you have to protect national security, of course, but on the other hand, you have to have your due process rights and your Sixth Amendment Confrontation Clause rights. There's a lot of bouncing going on here, a lot of complicated stuff. And for a while, Judge Aileen Cannon has left the May 20th start date in this particular trial. She's left this untouched, but no one in their right mind actually expected this thing to get started on May 20th. In fact, even Jack Smith, the special counsel, the prosecutor on this case, even Jack Smith and his lawyers had been pushing for this thing to actually get started after the July 4th recess. So July 6th, 7th, 8th, somewhere around there or so. Trump's attorneys responded to that by saying that this could move forward really by August or September at the absolute earliest, but it really should be pushed back until after the election in November. Recall that the Department of Justice also has a longstanding policy, publicly available and easy for everyone to just pull up on a quick Google search and read, a longstanding DOJ policy that prohibits the DOJ from making or effectuating prosecutorial decisions that have the effect of meddling in politics or potentially changing the outcome of elections. If you're a cynic like me, you might say, okay, they're really doing that already. And sure enough, fair they are. But you start to get to later on in the year into August, September, and you're starting to get really dicey as to how much that looks like election interference. But in any event, as of right now, Judge Aileen Cannon has postponed the Florida trial and she has not put in a trial start date. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that this trial is going away in its entirety. Recall also that in Georgia, in the Georgia prosecution there, the one brought by the highly unethical and compromised DA Fonnie Willis, there the district court judge Scott McAfee had also postponed the trial start date indefinitely. A similar thing happened with Tanya Chutkan, the district court judge in DC. So some of this is actually routine. I don't want to overemphasize this and make it out to be a bigger deal than it is, but it is somewhat of a formality and an important formality. There is really no indication as to when we're going to get an update as to when this trial might proceed. For now, we're going to just continue to go through the motions of a lot of the pre-trial motions and various regulations and mechanisms that are demanded by CIPA, the Classified Information Procedures Act, and various things like that. Okay, so from Florida then back to Washington, D.C., and we're talking here about Donald Trump's campaign. An interesting article in Washington Post that caught my eye, headline of this article, Trump advisors explore vast new legal powers for a global trade war. So recall that one of the Trump 2024 campaign's signature policy proposals, if you will, is a global tariff, a 10% essentially sweeping global tariff that would really put a 10% markup on all imports. And we can have an interesting economic debate over whether or not that is good policy. I personally tend to be more sympathetic towards tariffs and a nationalist economic policy and reshoring manufacturing and all that. I tend to be a little more sympathetic towards that, towards some more libertarian-leaning or right-liberal commentators query whether a 10% across-the-board tariff is actually the way to go. But the economic debate is really neither here nor there. I want to just flag this article because this our show is a legal show here, and I thought that this was interesting because what you see is some of Donald Trump's top trade and economic advisors, people like Robert Lighthizer, who served in the Trump 45 White House. Some of them are now having to try to come up with some sort of legal justification that would permit the executive, the president of the United States, to implement unilaterally, if need be, a sweeping 10% across the board tariff, because the Constitution fairly clearly does give Congress the power over raising revenue and over the power of the purse and taxation. So it'll be interesting to see whether or not Trump's advisors are actually able to devise a unilateral way to do this or whether or not they're going to fall short. It's also worth knowing just real briefly that Trump's own economic advisors are deeply torn on these very issues, by the way. So Donald Trump himself is notably somewhat of a protectionist and a nationalist when it comes to economic policy. This is one stance that he has held remarkably consistently going back many decades now. His advisors are a little more all over the map. So Robert Lighthizer, we just mentioned, definitely shares Trump's views. But other folks like Stephen Moore and Art Laffer, perhaps even Larry Kudlow, although he's had somewhat of a shift recently, not so much. A lot of interesting stuff going on there as well. Finally, for our final Around the Horn update for today, I want to just update you on another interesting legal slash political situation. So if you recall, Robert Malley, who was the Obama administration's point man when it came to negotiating the JCPOA, the Iran nuclear deal, and then he was the Biden administration's special envoy for Iran. Robert Malley is essentially a toady of the Iranian regime, which is just abominable and disgraceful. As anyone who can call himself an American patriot, I have nothing but disgusting things to say, to be honest with you, about Robert Malley. But there was a massive story that really flew under the radar that was broken by Jay Solomon at Semaphore from this past September, really just a week or so before the Hamas pogrom of October 7, 2023. And Jay Solomon broke the story of how this clandestine influence network, sponsored and funded in large part by the Iranian government, had actually infiltrated the corridors of power in Washington, D.C. It's essentially an in-house think tank from the Iranian Foreign Ministry called the Institute for Political and International Studies. They were able to infiltrate and get staffers inside the United States government. There was a Pentagon staffer who then was questioned by Tom Cotton and Josh Hawley and folks like that for having ties to the Iranian regime. They were able to get people into the corridors of power and various other think tanks and university as well. Well, Robert Malley was intricately connected to this particular Iranian influence operation. And the question has remained at some point, was Robert Malley's security clearance suspended, which it was last summer, months prior to the Semaphore breaking article? Was it suspended because he was just a toady of the Iranian regime, or was it actually something else? Well, as of right now, you actually have questions being asked by Senator Jim Risch of Idaho and Congressman Mike McCall of Texas, who are now formally trying to get to the bottom as to how Robert Malley's security clearance was actually suspended. It seems like he actually might have had something of a more Hillary Clinton 2016 bleach bite private email server type situation going on there. Perhaps he was just using personal devices to use his classified documents and emails and all that stuff. But anyway, I'm just happy because I think this is very important to get to the bottom to, and I'm happy that there are still some people on Capitol Hill who care about this story. It's an extraordinarily important story that implicates core national security concerns, and I personally take some solace that there are at least some up there on Capitol Hill who are still pushing for answers when it comes to the absolute disgrace that is Robert Malley. Well, that's it for today's Round the Horn segment. Up next in today's deep dive, huge day in the New York City courtroom with Justice Juan Merchan yesterday. Explosive testimony from the porn star Stormy Daniels. Donald Trump, man, juicy stuff, folks. Stay with us. We got it all for you when we come back.
I'm Mike Slater from the podcast Politics by Faith. This is a crazy time in our country. It's stressful, a lot of anxiety, and it's going to get worse. And I realized that one of the things that helps me take away the stress is realizing that there's nothing new under the sun. So on this podcast, we take the news of the day and we run it through the Bible and other periods in history to realize that we've been through this before and we can rise above again. Politics by Faith, anywhere you listen to the podcast. Politics by Faith.
Welcome back. It's time for today's deep dive. So as I've mentioned, it was an explosive day in court yesterday involving Donald Trump and Stormy Daniels. Stormy Daniels actually being called to the witness stand. It was unclear whether or not this was actually going to happen. And sure enough, it did happen there. And her testimony was really all over the map. In fact, she described her alleged encounter in 2006 with Donald Trump in a shocking degree of detail. She said that she blacked out during their encounter, which is her way of implying, I think, that their sexual encounter, or their alleged sexual encounter, I should say, it was her way of saying that alleged sexual encounter was less than fully consensual if she blacked out. Lots of other just juicy and at times fairly sordid details here going on. And this ultimately led, after the lunch break in the trial yesterday, this led to Todd Blanche, the Trump defense attorney, to come back from the lunch break and make a formal motion for a mistrial, where he basically argued the prosecutors went far beyond the scope of the testimony that they were permitted to elicit. He described the anecdotal detail, whether it's accurate or not, of Stormy Daniels blacking out as, quote unquote, extraordinarily prejudicial, said that they could taint the jury's ability to actually weigh and balance the evidence that was presented here. The key quote from Todd Blanche, the Trump attorney yesterday, was he said that you can't, quote, unring this bell. On the other hand, you had one of the prosecutors in the case, Susan Hoffinger, who argued that it was actually Trump's defense lawyers themselves who opened the door to this line of questions. And ultimately, you had the judge, Juan Merchan, who actually denied the motion for a mistrial, completely unsurprisingly, given his previous acts when it comes to gag orders and delays of trial and so forth there. So he denied the motion for a mistrial, totally unsurprisingly. And he even actually blamed Trump's defense attorneys for allowing Stormy Daniels' testimony to stray this far from the actual evidence in the case. And he said that it was actually the judge Merchan. This is what he was telling the Trump defense attorneys. It was actually Merchan who had to go in there and object to some of what was being said by Stormy because Trump's lawyers were not actually jumping in quick enough to do so. Really crazy stuff, right? So I think in a moment like this, it's important just to zoom out a little bit and talk about what is really going on here. You know, it is worth reiterating one more time that the case in New York City is just a farcical poop show of a legal prosecution. There is no other way to view it than that. This is a case that the federal prosecutor's office, the SDNY, as well as Alvin Bragg's predecessor, Cy Vance Jr., both looked into this case and declined to pursue charges. They did not think that it was weighty enough. You also have, in addition to the Soros-fronted hack, Alvin Bragg, who is bringing this case because, unlike the SDNY and even his own predecessor, Cy Vance, apparently Alvin Bragg has no compunctions whatsoever. But in addition to Alvin Bragg, you have the fact that Matthew Colangelo, a name we probably have not discussed enough on this show, Matthew Colangelo is a former Democratic Biden administration DOJ official who, oh, by the way, Fox News broke earlier this week. Turns out the DNC, the Democratic National Committee, actually paid Matthew Colangelo thousands of dollars for so-called political consulting going back to the year 2018. Matthew Colangelo is now an assistant prosecutor on this very case. That kind of stinks to high heaven, doesn't it? I mean, that really stinks to high heaven. And this whole thing, this whole prosecution, just zooming out here and looking at what is happening, you have a former president of the United States, who is now a candidate yet again for the highest office in the land, who is being dragged into court, who is being denied from the campaign trail 4 of the 5 days of the week. Today, Wednesday, is his only day off. The only day where he doesn't have to come beg for mercy to go to do such things as attend his grandson Barron's high school graduation. He's in court for 4 of the 5 days right now. They are due to the prosecutorial excesses of his political and partisan opposition in the far left of the Democratic Party. And he is having to sit there and listen to a disgraced, discredited porn star who goes on shows like The View with Whoopi Goldberg and Joy Behar and the rest of the clown brigade over there and says things like, oh, I can't wait to get testified and let them hear my truth. That's the kind of crap that Stormy Daniels has been saying. And then she gets up there yesterday and starts talking about blacking out back in 2000. Are you kidding me? Is this country a rule of law constitutionalist republic or not? This is absolute clown car banana republic stuff, the likes of which I never thought ever that I would see in this entire country whatsoever. So look, do I take a modicum of solace that the Florida prosecution now, in addition to the Washington, D.C. and Georgia prosecutions, appears to be going belly up, or at least is getting severely delayed and sidetracked? Yeah, sure. I do take some solace out of that. But what's happening in the New York City case is an absolute abominable disgrace. And I do go back to what we were saying on the show recently, which is starting to ask some questions, which is, if a jury finds him guilty nonetheless, is it actually going to matter? It is very difficult to say with any degree of certainty there. But boy, if there is any justice in the world, it really, really should not matter whatsoever, really. Because, I mean, this case is just such an extreme overextension of the Democrat lawfare complex and this nation's prosecutorial apparatuses. There is no world whatsoever in which this case should have been brought. And I just continue to hope that Donald Trump is going to get acquitted there. Again, all you need is one. You just need one juror to go off the beaten path there, to take the road less traveled by, to kind of borrow from the Robert Frost poem, and to say that Donald Trump is not guilty on these charges there. And then you we'll get a hung jury and or a mistrial. That is really all it is going to take there. But just yesterday, just following the Stormy Daniels stuff and reading up on it really just got my blood pressure spiking, if you can't tell, because it is just so embarrassing, not for Donald Trump, not for Stormy Daniels, but it is embarrassing for this country that with all this crap that we are dealing with in the world right now, all the crap that is happening here with the economy, the wide open southern border, the this, the that, this is what we are dealing with. This is what the Democrat lawfare complex has decided to distract you with. This is how they have decided to take their political opposition off the campaign trail for 4 of the 5 days of the week. That really ought to make you angry. And I suggest to you that if it does not make you question everything that is going on, throw the Matthew Colangelo stuff into the mix. Absurd. Tie it all together. And if you're not paying attention yet, if you're not wide awake, then I don't know what the heck you're waiting for, because this thing really does just stink to high heaven. That's it for today's deep dive. Up next in today's closing argument, Biden administration throwing Israel under the bus yet again. Surprise, surprise. What have they done now? Why are they doing it? We'll analyze it all when we come back. Welcome back. It's time for today's closing argument. So as we have discussed, the IDF is moving into Rafah, which is Hamas's southernmost stronghold there on the Gaza Strip on the border between Gaza and Egypt. This is quite literally months overdue. The IDF was essentially standing right outside the city gates, proverbially, symbolically speaking, not literally, but they were there for 2.5 months or so, trying to get the formal go-ahead from the Biden administration, maybe trying to get a temporary pause in exchange for a hostage swap or something like that there. But at some point, when it became obvious this was not coming, the IDF decided to pull the trigger and to go in. And in fact, earlier this week, the Israeli war cabinet decided in a unanimous vote where not just Prime Minister Netanyahu, but his leading political opposition, Benny Gantz, even signed on to this as well. They actually agreed that they had no choice at this point but to go in into Rafah. And this has gotten the Biden administration to start wetting its underpants yet again, because the Biden administration is under this ridiculous misimpression that Rafah is like a total no-go zone. And like, how dare you go there? How dare you try to exterminate or eradicate the Hamas cancer there from Rafah, the southernmost stronghold in the Strip? Yesterday, it came out that the Biden administration is pausing the shipments of thousands of bombs, of mass munitions to Israel because of concerns over the invasion in Rafah. And it's just so ridiculous. It is just so absurd. They are playing election year politics, I guess, yet again, although it does remind me of my column that I just published this past Friday on this very topic. I titled this column, quote, "Joe Biden, Dearborn Shahid, commits political suicide via Hamas appeasement." Shahid referring to a martyr, of course, basically making the argument that Joe Biden is martyring himself for radicals in Dearborn, Michigan and Minneapolis, Minnesota, but he is alienating large swaths of moderate and independent voters all across the nation's swing states by doing such ridiculous stunts as this. The American people still overwhelmingly support our ally Israel. They want Israel to finish the job with Hamas. And it is just disgraceful that the Biden administration is doing this to an ally in wartime. The Biden administration claims that it wants peace in the region. They claim to want a grand deal between the Saudis and the Israelis, similar to what the Trump administration was able to achieve in the Abraham Accords between Israel and Morocco, the UAE, Bahrain, and Sudan. And you know what? The easiest way to get peace between Israel and the other Arab states is actually to embolden Israel and to show that the U.S. stands in ironclad fashion with Israel. If that happens, the Arab countries see a strong ally, they see a strong America, they're going to want to ally with those countries. That is how you get peace. The Biden administration, as is its wont, is doing the exact opposite of what a sane, prudent, and rational policy would do. That's it for today's America on Trial with Josh Hammer. We'll be right back with you tomorrow morning.